Hello again to all of our listeners today, those of you who are joining us live, as well as those listening to our recorded program. This is the April 17th edition of the Frazzled Entrepreneur Program. I'm your host, H. Les Brown. I'm an entrepreneur, a certified Franklin Covey life coach, and author of the new book, The Frazzled Entrepreneur's Guide to Having It All. For technical reasons, we're not going to have our phone lines open during this live broadcast. If you have any questions or comments, please look to our online chat box. We'll have an email address posted there where you can contact our guest directly. And as always, please feel free to use the chat box anytime during our live broadcast. Drop by if only to say hi. This is the seventh program in our series, Real Entrepreneurs Live, and I want to welcome Mr. Mark Pittman to our program and tell you a little bit about him. Mark is a fellow Franklin Covey certified coach, the author of Ask Without Fear, and founder of FundraisingCoach.com. Nationally recognized as a thought leader, Mark helps individuals and organizations raise money more effectively than they thought possible. He's invited to speak at conferences and teaches seminars through various organizations, including Blackbaud's Conference for Nonprofits and the Association of Fundraising Professionals. He also teaches virtually in places like Charity University. He also has his own Creating Donor Evangelists audio program and other products to help people excel at raising money, and these are available at the FundraisingCoach.com store. Mark is also pastor of the Vineyard Church of Waterville and the director of the Foundation of Inland Hospital. Mark says that his most important credential is that he's the husband of an incredible wife and the father of three amazing kids. Mark, welcome to the Frazzled Entrepreneur Program.
Thank you. I feel right at home with that title.
Why? Do you have other ones?
No, with the Frazzled Entrepreneur.
Oh, the Frazzled Entrepreneur title. I thought the Fundraising Coach.
Oh, no. That actually, Fundraising Coach, I went on an introductory call with Lynn Christian to look at becoming certified as a Franklin Covey coach. And as we were on the call, I just did a quick Google. This is, I guess, about 5 years ago. I did a quick Google check to see what kind of domain names with fundraising and coaching were out there. And Fundraising Coach was available. And I remember at the end of the call saying, do you know this is available? And she said, you know, I think you're going to be one of the ones that actually goes on to the training and all. And sure enough, just a month later, I was out in Utah and doing my thing. So people have even asked me to buy it, to buy the domain. They would ask me to sell it to them, which...
Do yourself a favor. Don't sell.
Oh, my goodness, no. Yeah. So what they did, I found out later, they did thefundraisingcoach.com.
Yes.
Which is fine. Whatever. But good. Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, great. You are known as the Fundraising Coach. Tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, for me, I focus focus with executive directors and board chairs and help them learn how to raise more money for their nonprofits. But also, it's fascinating. I've been fundraising for about over a decade now in a lot of different organizations and through a lot of capital campaigns. But I'm still amazed that asking for money seems to be as scary for people as untimely death. They just don't want to do it at all. And most people, just they got into their cause, they love their cause, they love their mission, but funding the mission is the part that really scares the tar out of them. So I get to help them kind of reconnect with the passion that got them involved in the nonprofit in the first place. And then do the stuff that we all do, all of us that are coaches get to do, is help people realign with their vision and their mission and strategize the game plan so that they're playing on their own field, not on somebody else's expectations, and so they can help manage their board's fields too. My favorite client so far has been a board chair who wanted to learn how to raise money better, and that's very rare that a board chair would actually seek external coaching and how to be a better fundraiser. So I was pretty pleased with that. That was a long-standing relationship, which was really neat.
Well, that sounds fantastic. You know, as you were talking, it brought me back to my years in the ministry. And I know I was one of the I was definitely one of those people who absolutely hated to do fundraising. I mean, we built buildings and we had to do the fundraising for it, and we had every year we had an annual bishop's appeal. It was interesting though that that one year when I was doing the bishop's appeal thing. Instead of reading the text that we were supposed to read to encourage people to get involved and give, what I did was, while they were filling out their pledge cards, I started reading just this very, very long list of charities and causes and everything that their donations were going to go to. And that those particular services where I did that, they raised more money than they ever had before.
Fascinating. That is so neat. Now, which I'm a pastor too, and one of my other hats. But which franchise were you in the ministry?
I was a Catholic priest.
Neat. Okay. Back in Catholic school, I asked the priests where they got their clothes if they had like Kmart's to do that. And I was so excited. I love the collar. I just thought those looked so cool. But I'm a Vineyard church pastor, so I wear the bow tie fundraising, but in church I'm usually in jeans and a T-shirt or an open collar shirt because it's the Southern California denomination that's just very relaxed. So, for me, that's one of the other fun things that I've been able to do is even before I was a minister, with the title or whatever, I was able to just talk to groups of clergy and lay people alike. And one of the articles on my fundraisingcoach.com site is fundraising in the Bible. Because when you look at, there's a lot of giving in the Bible, but there are actual fundraising asks in Scripture. There are about six solicitations. People like Moses, David, Hezekiah, Nehemiah, great people. Paul gets downright manipulative in some of his letters. I don't feel comfortable doing what Paul did. He's talking to the Corinthians in the Saul campaign, and he says, please, I'm sending this letter so you're not embarrassed by how much this little church is giving compared to what you say you would give, and you're not even looking like you're coming through on that. I mean, it's just amazing. So so it was really fun because some of the fun stuff was Hezekiah was a secular clergy, king, that, just the government was, standing up saying, the priests aren't getting their due. And so just being able to, and seeing most of the times when the asking was done well, a worship service broke out, which is very cool. So I haven't had that experience yet. I'm still looking for that. Where people just, Moses, they had to tell the people to stop giving. And there's, I think it's Hezekiah, too. Hezekiah goes around and says, what are all these piles of stuff here? And typical of a clergy person would, many clergy people, when it comes to finances, they said, we don't know what to do with it. They won't stop giving. And so typical of a good business person like Hezekiah, he said, build storehouses. Build a shed. Put it in a shed.
Well, that was then, this is now. That now they'd say, let's build a bigger church.
Well, right. So it's just really fun, though, to be able to make fundraising. It's not entirely fearless, devoid of fear, but at least make it so people have that aha of, hey, I can do that. I don't have to become somebody I'm not. I don't have to. I do a blog every 2 weeks, and I'm working on my next book actually through the blog, and Fundraising Secrets. And I think it was Fundraising Secret 11 was Don't Be a Ned. Have you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray?
Yes, sure.
Okay, Ned is the insurance salesman that meets him. Bill? Bill Connors? It's me, Ned. Needle Nose Ned. Ned the Head. Da, 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 da.
Yes.
He's just pushy and arrogant and annoying and totally self-centered, doesn't care about Phil at all. And you really feel good when Phil, one of the days, Phil just bops him right in the face. And there's another day when Phil does a really inappropriate hug, and Ned just kind of gets scared and goes away really fast. But oftentimes I feel like our nonprofits do that because we get so wrapped up in what we're doing, we don't even really care about the donor at all or the donor prospect.
Oh.
So, or the worst, people think that that's what they have to do to be fundraisers. They have to go out there and force other people to do something they don't want to do, which is parting with their money. When fundraising, it's just a huge privilege. We get to connect. Most people spend the better part of their 168 hours in a week doing stuff that they're not really committed to. Now, your listeners, as entrepreneurs, if they're, you know, wherever we're at in the entrepreneurial leap, are actually getting to plug into their passions, which is exciting. But a lot of people they're interacting with aren't able to do that. And one of the neat things fundraisers get to do is help justify all the stuff that they're doing in the book. They're sacrificing family time. They're giving their best of their waking hours to making an income. And what we get to do is help them find ways that they could plug it back into the things that mean something to them, their values, their passions.
Very interesting.
And then when you look at it that way, who wouldn't want to do this, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, the silence was a little deafening, but
okay. Well, I'm still here. Well, I love that. I love that outlook, and I'm sure that it brings in some ahas from people. I also love the fact that you brought out the 168 hours because that's definitely one of my big approaches.
Thanks, sweetie.
That in the resources that we have in life, we have energy that we measure in hours, and we have wealth that we measure in dollars ordinarily. Run short of dollars, there are ways that we can make more. We have 168 hours, and that's it. Not a second more, not a second less every week. So it seems to me that people are a lot more careful with their money, which they can get more of if they so choose, than with their time, which they can do nothing to get more of. There are more people debting time than are debting money.
Boy, that's chilling. Well, that's really good.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you use that 168 hours. Because it's a really sobering number,
and it helps bring something really abstract, like time management or whatever the term is that's being used. It helps really bring it into focus. It's a finite pie, and it, like you said, it's interesting where people think about finances, whether it's fundraising or business expenses or whatever. They think of that as their income as a finite pie. When that's really not, there's different ways that you can expand that pie, but you can't. You said it right on. There are ways that you can be better and more effective, or more efficient, so you can get more done in the amount of time. But at the end of the week, you still have had 168 hours.
8 hours. That's exactly right.
So,
well, speaking about 168 hours, how long have you had your business? When did you start it? How did you get into it?
Well, this is been a long journey, which is fun, but I'll try to – my wife tells me I usually give a $10 answer when people really want a 10-cent one, so I'll try to give you like a $2.50 answer. I started when I was – I was born as a young child. No, I'm just kidding. I won't go back that far. I started fundraising out of college. I was in admissions for a couple of years, got into a dead end. And already in 2 years, there was just nobody was moving anywhere. And so I kind of made a lateral move to development and found out I loved it. And within a couple of years, I started speaking at conferences. Particularly, I was doing, at that point, college fundraising, and then I moved to a prep school and doing some independent school fundraising. And got involved in an association of independent school fundraisers. And found out that I had a knack for being able to communicate things in ways that people got really fired up to do what they do anyway. I would take give a seminar on alumni, how to engage your alumni and your volunteers, and people would leave there saying, "You just changed my whole aspect of my life," or "I'm so glad my head of school was here because they get it now. They get what I do. Mm-hmm. And I was forever connecting Seth Godin and all these other, definitely the Seven Habits. And I was always mm-hmm. connecting the business literature that I've always been reading. I did my master's in organizational leadership. So I'd always had the business literature. But I was able to connect that to nonprofits in a way that gave nonprofits people language that the rest of the world could understand, and in ways that just help them see what they're doing in a different light that was really reaffirming and validating. So when I started doing that, that became exciting. Then I got the opportunity to move back to my homestead in Maine, and I just leapt at that. And this is like a what not to do. I gave my notice at my work, gave 6 weeks notice, was given 24 hours to clean out my desk. They weren't pleased. So it was only then that I found out how important I was to the organization. I'd been there for 4 years and hadn't found out that yet. So, as the door was closing behind me, they said, "You couldn't believe someone that was this core to the organization was leaving that so quickly." Well, I never knew. I didn't have a contract, but whatever. It turned out to be a really good journey because I had the 3 to 6 months. I had coaching first of all. For these couple of years before that. So my coach and I had worked out with a Highlands Abilities Battery and one of the best assessment tools out there as far as I'm concerned. And I feel like the Norelco Razor guy, I liked it so much I bought the company because I ended up becoming certified in Highlands Abilities Battery. Are you familiar with it, Les? Have you heard it?
I'm not.
Okay, one of the neat things about this is I love analyzing myself. I love finding out, the better me I can be, the better the quality of my life is. So I love, Enneagram and Myers-Briggs and DISC personality theory. But this, the Highlands, is this amazingly comprehensive test that measures how well you perform on task in a short period of time. So under time constraint, what are you able to do easily? And usually, according to Highlands, it's one part of a whole person, but your hardwiring can be the major part of your stress because you're put in situations where you're actually not really good at doing what you're doing. And you can learn skills to develop it. We all have to learn skills to kind of cope with those areas. But when we can plug into what we actually are hardwired to do, it just goes smoothly and a lot easier. So the Highlands, because there's only one part of it that is, do you prefer to read a book or go out with friends? Or do you, that kind of subjective self-analysis. The rest of it is it's about 3 hours of seemingly inane tasks that you do. And then it spits out, brings you out with a report of 5 key drivers and I think 19 other abilities that are very illuminating. I was just doing this the other week, and it really validated. It intersects with Myers-Briggs and some of the other things, but it's a standalone, and you didn't fool it. I can take some of the other ones and know how I want to answer because I know how I want to come out, but this you can't fool. So after my mom took it, she said, Mark, she called me up. She said, I feel more brain dead after 3 hours of this than I did after 33 hours of labor with you and nothing to show for it. So it was a very but you get this long report, and then you get many you get a 2-hour feedback with the provider going over, making, what did you agree with, what didn't you agree with, how can you strategize your life so you're in this situation more. Part of the thing I found out was that I'm really good on my own and being able to offer my independent view to other people because I see things differently. And so when I made the jump to Maine, the coaching was just a natural. I had been so benefited, such a benefit. The coaching value was so clear to me. I wanted to go and help that with others, and then I'd already started doing speaking. But here's where the entrepreneurial stuff kicks in. When you're not an employee and you're an entrepreneur, like your listeners know, there's no paycheck coming.
You get paid for
performance. Yeah. So here I am sitting with my 3 to 6 month savings that I had built up, which we churned through in about 3 to 6 months. And the community college, I had a couple of kids at the time. We now have 3. The community college had these out-of-the-box sort of training programs, Ken Blanchard, Fish Philosophy, whatever the box was. And so I knew I had practiced presenting. I knew I was good at it. And the feedback, people invited me back. That's sort of to me a good indicator of whether they like me or not. Not just patting me on the back because they're pushing me out the door, but they're inviting me back. So with this one, I was sitting down there, and for years I'd been asked, can you teach me fundraising? And I'd always say, no, I can't. You know, it's just something I'm good at. It's just kind of a congenital birth defect. That's how I am. And, you can't teach a birth defect. It's just the way it was. So here I am sitting in this community college knowing that I needed to eat, and this the person that was overseeing corporate training at the time asked me, can you, you can do. She responded to my email. And she said, I would love that you could do this if you want to, but I'd love to see, we have a lot of nonprofits in our community. Is there anything you can do to teach them how to ask for money? Same question I've been asked many other times before, but I was in a very different place. And so like most entrepreneurs, I just left with both feet. I said, sure, I could create a three-hour seminar, no problem. And she said, but I don't know if we can afford you. What's your fee? Which was so cool because I think I had at that point heard that they're only paying $30 an hour for a trainer. And here's another, entrepreneurial thing. One of the things I made early on in my even thinking about going independent was I didn't want to be the Walmart of fundraising, yes, coaching or coaching in general. I wanted to.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge philosophical thing that people have to come down the side of. Are they going to be sales-driven in the sense of, hey, 70% off, come and buy me now? Are they going to stick to what they think know their value is? So, and that's where good coaching comes in, too. I had a coach colleague who went through Franklin Covey training with me. She and I have been coaching each other since then. But then also Lynn Christian, who was my mentor coach, was able to really continue to just affirm, no, you've got a unique thing, and you are worth, the amount that you want to charge is not crazy. So I looked at her and I figured $1,000. So go ahead.
Just FYI, Lynn Christian was also my mentor coach at the beginning.
Yay! Oh, she's just tremendous.
So we share something in
We're
common.
We're like family.
I know.
You're my brother.
long lost.
That's right. So here I am, sitting here with this woman who says that, and I know. So I did some quick calculation. I, for some reason, thought of $1,000 a day as my rate. And I divided that by 8, and that came out to 125. So I said, she said, well, so I don't know if we could afford you. I said, well, I generally get $1,000 a day, which is $125 an hour. Now, at that point, I had been an employee so long, wasn't totally comfortable with a project. The hourly rate thing still was helpful at that time. I don't use it anymore, but it was then. And she looked at me, and she didn't even flinch. And she said they ended up to shorten the story. They worked with it. We worked on something that if we get a certain number of participants, if we went over like 30 participants, they'd pay me $125 an hour. If we were under that, they'd pay me $75 or $100 an hour. Either way, it was still more than twice what they were paying anyone else.
Wow.
And they allowed me to create my own content. So my first was a 3-hour seminar, where I've learned since then that people really aren't interested in knowing all you know. They just want to know something that'll help them. Because I would do the 3 hours talking. I most people can listen at about, I think it's a rate of 100 words a minute. And I'm known to talk at usually around 400 words a minute with gusts of up to 600. I just talk fast. I was just in Charleston doing a keynote last year, and people asked me, y'all talk really fast. Could you slow down for us? I mean, it was just a dialect thing. So I packed that 3 hours tight. I almost forgot people needed bathroom breaks. I was just, out of that came another one, and I got feedback from that one. Most of them said he talks way too fast, but there were also some things like we want to handle objections or we want to learn this. And so out of that, I created most of the fundraisingcoach.com services page. Those are all the seminars underneath there are ones that I created because of that gig. They kept having me back, and I had 24 hours when I moved up to Waterville. I had 24 hours of Nonprofit Fundraising Institute's material, which then became my book that I've got coming out within the next week or two. The Ask Without Fear book has been transcribed.
Fabulous.
Yeah. what I found, too, is that as a person that didn't want to be the Walmart and being an entrepreneur that did want to eat, working in nonprofits, there's a lot of great nonprofits out there, a lot of worthy causes, and a lot of them that need my services can't afford me. But if you want to help, so what I did was ended up creating a book that was going to, it's going to be $14.95, called Ask Without Fear. And I intentionally, most of the other great books out there on asking suffer two drawbacks for just regular board member or volunteer. The first one is the cost. Usually if they're usually around $30 before discounts. And that's just, that's steep for any book and the kind of trade paperback genre. If you go into the bookstore and you look at a $30 book, you're going to want to know why it's worth that. The other thing that happens with fundraising books is that they're usually, and I fought with this. I fought hard to keep this under 100 pages because I wanted it to be something a board member could read or an executive director could read really quickly and feel fired up and ready to go. And like they had the information they needed to go make a successful ask to fund their cause. But most of the people out there that are writing tend to want to get it all in, sort of like my first seminar. They want to, while we're at it, we're going to do an entire chapter on, or many chapters on how to write a fundraising letter. And then we're going to do many chapters on web fundraising. We're going to do many chapters. And it could go on and on and on and be a book that never ends. So I tried to keep it really focused and really slim, which I'm getting good feedback from. The early reviews out are saying that, aside from one typo on page, I think, 48, the apostrophe was before the S instead of after. But other than that, people are saying it really is exciting to see that there's something tangible that they could give their boards to say, this is what we've been looking for. You know, it's sort of the book I wish my board had read before I went to any of the jobs I've had. So it was really neat how that all started. Thanks for asking.
you're very welcome. Well, that sounds very much like the challenges that I faced when I wrote my book that just came out in November.
Congratulations.
Mine is $16.95, so it's about 200 pages, but still, one of the things that I tried to do with it, two of the things. One was to make it practical so that people could get carry something away from every chapter, and then one of the other insights was to make it so that no chapter takes more than 15 minutes to read.
Oh, yes, that's a great idea.
So that so that a busy person could sit down and read a chapter and over lunch or whatever.
That's great.
That's
where my second book, with the one I'm working on now, I don't know if it's going to be 52 fundraising secrets or 100 fundraising secrets or 365, but I wanted it to be one a day for a certain period of time that they could read one a day and put that one into action. That's a great idea, though. I like the idea of just being able to read over lunch.
Yep. So in putting this, I take it, fairly successful business together.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the biggest challenges you had to face?
I think for me, I'm the type of guy that jumps in, the ready, aim, fire, aim sort of person. I knew I was ready, so I just fired. And fortunately, I didn't just hang out my little coaching shingle and expect the world to flock to me. I had been doing I've read a lot of Seth Godin's work, and so for the greater part of a decade, I'd already had my own blog since 2000, and I'd been doing.
Wow.
I was doing blogging before I knew it was blogging. I would annotate my book list. I read about 75 to 100 books a year on a regular basis, and so I would just jot down a few lines about them anyway. Just because I was reading them, I might as well put it up there. I like to keep score. I like to know what where my time is going. And so that's one of the ways I kept score. And I put it up on my markpittman.com site, which is now just my personal blog and my beer brewing blog and my church planning blog. It's kind of everything else is not fundraising for the most part. But so I've been doing that. And also, here's something that is just intriguing that might be helpful for entrepreneurs, is just doing a glam search on Google. Kind of typing quotes in Google and searching your name or searching your phrase. I found out that there was a grade B movie actor with the same exact spelling of what I thought was a unique name, Mark with a C, Pittman with one T. Turns out he had been in some Manson family movie that was like about Charles Manson. And his big movie apparently was Deadbeat at Dawn. That was, and it just shocked me less. I was so scared when I first saw that. I remember sitting at my desk at the prep school and thought, oh no, here are people that have just heard me speak. They're going to Google my name because it's all they can remember. And boom, they're going to see Deadbeat at Dawn. You know, like I have this alter ego that's the evil psychopath. So I made a commitment then that I was going to put enough content on the web, whether articles through article submissions like Get Slightly Famous, you know, Stephen Van Yoder's work, or other things, that when people, at least the first 10 references to my name would at least pull up.
You.
Five of them would at least pull up me, yeah, and legitimately me in ways that people could see, oh, maybe this is somebody else. So I've been really pleased that I've been doing that, but I didn't have a business plan, and I think that's the part that it's one of those kind of catch-22s. If you take the time to do a business plan, you could get lost in it and never get out of it. But there's something about action. When you start acting, things do happen. Like I found somebody that would do the logo for me. The logo I continue to have, and with the fundraising coach, where the raising part is raised up as fund, and then raising is a little bit higher, and coaches underneath it, and the bow tie is on the eye, because that's something that people very clearly said was iconic of me.
In eye-catching red, no less.
And eye-catching red, no less. You're right, yes. And then on my website, the left part was all coffee beans, because coffee is just something that's always been a passion of mine. I like to try to discern the flavors of the geographical origins of the coffee bean based on just the feel in my mouth, and it's sort of like wine tasting, but
I wouldn't have known that had you not said that, because I have your website up in front of me, and it looked like a very very nice pattern over there on the left. But until you said it, I hadn't noticed that they're coffee beans, but they sure are.
That's funny. Yeah. So what I'm trying to do now is I'm actually going through a re-imaging sort of thing, because most of the people that know me get it. But I'm more interested in reaching the people that don't know me, and they're confused by it. I've had a few emails over the last year saying, what's up with the coffee beans? So why confuse people? But the e-myth was really helpful for me. Working through the e-myth over one, New Year's is always a great goal-setting time for me. And just working through, I didn't work through to the detail that he says to work through, the whole setting up job descriptions. But really visioning what kind of, for me it was, what kind of firm do I want to have? How many employees? What is going to be distinctive? What's out there? What's the research on the other things that are in the community and in my field? I found that to be very effective at really helping me communicate. Along with a business plan and is the blogging. I also started doing an e-zine every 2 weeks, which has caused me, I think I've done that since 2003, and it's caused me to continue processing content in a way that has helped me stay sharper. But it also gave me fodder for books and for other things, and it gives me a reason to be in front of my potential clients every 2 weeks. Still a very small list. There's a few. I've had about 1,000 people that have signed up overall in the 5 years. Not all of them have stayed subscribed for people who shift from jobs and all. But so I'm still. My next step is how do I expand that from just 1,000. But it's been a very good group, and their people are very responsive. They've become a research and development group. They helped me name my title. I named my book. I had many different options, and I ran a couple of contests to see what was the most effective one. So developing relationships with people through the web and doing a business plan is two of the things that, one of the things I did well, and then the business plan part I did a little bit later. And for me, I would probably recommend people that are still working in their field to phase out of your job. Think of an exit strategy rather than just going cold turkey, because if you can move to the point where your job, and people have probably heard this on your show, where your job is your primary client, that can be a very helpful way of doing it. The 4-hour work week, have you read that?
Actually, I have it sitting right next to me.
Okay.
I haven't opened it yet.
Read it once, and I'm working through it again, and there's just so much stuff that Tim Ferriss says in there that really helps thinking about making the leap and building yourself up to be effective when it really counts, when you're not getting, if you're getting a paycheck now. But there's a lot of great tips on just establishing your web presence and making it look like you're more corporate than mom and pop, which is a decision you have to make. How do you want to professionally present yourself?
Yes.
So for me, I'm a little bit in between. I still use first person plural usually on my website. I'll help you. I'll do this. I work with people to do that. But then I do have my Facebook page right on the front too, so that people can go to my mm-hmm. Facebook profile, which is a little bit more personal. I don't usually do anything that would get me sent to court. But I've heard of people that do that, and then they post it on their Facebook or MySpace pages, which is just dumb. So I want people to still feel like I'm professional enough, but also know that just to get, I feel like as a Gen Xer, I like having other people get to know me from as a person too. So.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. I'm doing a mentoring course with Kathleen Gage, who was guest on this program, the March 20th edition of the Frazzled Entrepreneur program. Her interview is out there on the website right now on the Blog Talk Radio Frazzled Entrepreneur website. And we were just talking last night about this question of your corporate identity. And she was saying that it used to be when she first started out, you were a small business and you put up this very white-collar, very staid website that you invested a lot of money in, trying to impress people with how big and important your business was, where she's saying that nowadays even the big companies are making it's all about making it more personal.
Isn't it amazing?
Personalizing it, it was mentioned that even the big companies hire celebrities because they want a personal face on the company that people can relate to. So these days, keeping a little personality in it is very important. While still, and there's your balance, still maintaining a certain amount of professionalism.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So then my local community, I'm the pastor of a church plant, a startup church, and a fundraising coach, and I just want, and a brewmeister, which is a weird combination for a lot of people in my community, that I'm a pastor. I'm going to brew my own beer. But part of the reason I'm out there on Facebook and I have my own personal blog too is that I want people to know that. But if they go to fundraisingcoach.com or pittmancoaching.com, they're going to see a more professional view, and they can mm-hmm. choose to see the other stuff too. But I think it's all about relationships, and so it's developing relationships. One of the things for entrepreneurs that's really cool about Facebook, if you don't do it to market intentionally, because there are some people that put their profile pictures as their book cover, which is just, sorry, I haven't checked to see if you're on Facebook, but it's cheesy, because most people on Facebook change their profile picture at least a few times, and it's just pretty obvious if you're just out there to promote your stuff. But if you're a person on there and you have either a group for your cause, you can communicate with people that join your group, or you can have pages. I'm now experimenting with an Ask Without Fear page, and I've got a little over a dozen fans of the page right now, and I have a fundraisingcoach.com page, and it's neat because when somebody clicks on it to become a fan, it shows up on their profile that they became a fan. And so, therefore, I'm getting exposed to a whole group of people that never would have, all their friends, their circle of friends that I'll never meet necessarily, but maybe drawn in because, oh, well, Susie's a fan of this book. I wonder what that, maybe it has something for me. And so
Absolutely.
On each of my pages, I found a great shopping cart vendor, e-junkie.com, e-junkie.com. And if anybody, if you go to the fundraisingcoach.com/blog, you can click on the e-junkie button and become a referral. I get a referral, but don't worry, I'm not worried about that because it's $5 a month for up to 10 products and then $10 a month for a little bit more. And it's just a really easy button shopping cart solution. It uses Google Checkout and PayPal. And So I was able to put those buttons on those Facebook pages as straight HTML. So I've got my shopping, I've got my store on the fundraisingcoach.com store. I've also got it on my askwithoutfear.com site, on my creatingdonorevangelists.com site. I have those products on those separate sites. And then I also have the store buttons and all on my fundraisingcoach.com Facebook fan page and my Ask Without Fear fan page. So it's really interesting to try to, you know, to monitor. Where is it out there? It's not only, it's like having multiple sites, multiple locations for your retail store. It's kind of fun.
Absolutely.
To not be stuck to one digital address. It's good.
When you were talking about your big challenges, you said that that you didn't start out with a business plan, but following Gerber and the e-book, the e-myth, you started to put things together. And of course, with my approach to the frazzled entrepreneur, I really stress how important planning is. That that being reactive really is a ticket straight to the world of the frazzled.
Yeah.
I was wondering, do you have I see that you're into the social networking and blogging and various internet based marketing approaches. Do you have have you put together a plan for this? Do you know where you're going with it?
Oh, no, I'm going to be honest here. Not really. I'm kind of intuitively going on this. One of the things I goofed on, actually, the first 2 months of this year was I've been trying with the Facebook ads and the Google ads, and mm-hmm. I messed up royally because I ended up paying. Part of it was because Tim Ferriss really helped me on this, the 4-Hour Work Week author, because I was trying to drive traffic to my site by saying free articles here. Every time someone clicks on that, I pay. And that was expensive. I paid over $500 in 2 months on ads that generated about zero in sales. So that was an expensive class to learn. Yeah. And then Google, for whatever reason, my Google AdWords are just, they're like $1 and $5 per click. So most of those, I have noticed a decrease in sales, so I can't say that it didn't generate any book sales, but they didn't generate enough to cover the cost of the advertising. So some of it is just fixing it as I go. But for me, I think the biggest the church plant was the kind of I didn't see that one coming. The having an opportunity, I'd wanted to be a church planter since I was in high school. Our denomination usually has a small group of people that start developing a heart for region, and then they go there and they kind of colonize a church and grow the church in that community. And in our case, in Waterville, a church closed and asked our denomination to start one, which hasn't happened in our 30 years of denomination. So that helped reef. It just has thrown a monkey wrench in a really wonderful way into my Michael Gerber planning. For me, what happens is it's the process of writing it down that there's a power released in that. One of my products is a freebie, and you can buy the workbook too. It's called Magnet Goals, I call it. So if you Google Magnet Goals, all is one word with no space in between it, it pulls up as one of the top searches. But there's a five-part e-class that people can sign up for on the website, fundraisingcoach.com/magnetgoals.htm. Or you can get a printed version workbook, or you could buy the download. What's really amazing to me is that people consistently tell me one of the first things you do is write down 100 things that you want to get done in the year. Dreams, crazy, wild things. Just make sure you get to 100. And any of us that have done anything like that know that you start getting into some really deep territory after about 15, you start really digging. And then by 50 or all, it's an amazing process to go through itself. And I just had somebody this week email me. She said, it works, because she had just gotten to that step. She didn't do the rest of the steps, all the goal planning stuff she didn't do. But she wrote that list out, and she just found her list of 74 hopes and dreams for 2008. And she'd already started it, like laying down tracks for a CD. She's a vocalist and musician, and she wanted to create her own CD. She's never done that. And she's been in the studio and already recorded 5 of the tracks, and then she just stumbled across the list and realized, oh, I wrote that down 8 weeks ago. Oh, my goodness. So even if I don't follow the plan, even if you don't follow the plan, writing it down, and I tell people in the Magnet Goals program, if you just write it down, stick it in a drawer, and open it up on January 1st, you'll be shocked at how you focus your energies just by the fact of writing it down. I don't have a specific strategy yet. I don't know where the social networking thing is going. What I am finding is that there's a better profit margin in creating content that I don't have to do again. So the Creating Donor Evangelist, I went to a recording studio, I wrote an article based on the Creating Customer Evangelist book that came out a few years ago, got the author's permission to teach this as donor, because it all applies to nonprofits. They said, go for it. This is great, because I'm attributing the work to them. Made it my own, added some other content, created a CD, and I've been selling the CD, but I'm finding that people are more interested in just getting the download, as am I. I'd much rather just get the audio download, which is a lot easier from a business perspective, because I don't have to duplicate or ship. I just have to make it available. It's up there. Bluehost.com is my web host. It costs me nothing. It costs me like $7 a month, and I can have unlimited domains based off of that. And so I'm able to service my customers better, because they get it today. They don't have to wait for the post office and all. And it's a lot easier on my time, because, like we were talking, we only have 168 hours in the week. If I have to spend that time going to the post office and shipping, packing, and all that, why would I do that? So I use that's been one thing that I've been trying to be more intentional about with Fundraising Coaches. I try to record everything. Whenever I speak, I try to record it, and whether it's a teleclass or a conference, and my batting average is about 50%. A lot of the seminars I do, there seems to be 50% of the time a really bad technical glitch that makes it so it's not consumable. I've just bought a cord, so wherever I'm speaking now, I plug it into my laptop, and I use this program called Audacity, which is free.
Yes, sure.
And so I just record with Audacity, and I'm already mic'd anyway. Why shouldn't I be retaining that content so that I can repurpose it and sell it later? So that's most of my plan is based around that. And the keynoting just started last year, Les. And I got to tell you, it's great to get the fee for keynoting that you used to get for a day. So I've really been trying to maximize that. And with the book coming out, I sat down with a librarian here who has a really cool strategy for helping me sell the book by helping libraries raise money. And then each library library bought a book, the publisher's doing a 10,000 print run, which is huge, she told me. I don't know. This is my first book. I didn't know that was big. But they're doing that. And, it's been fun to see who comes along to help me at the right time. But the biggest thing that I feel like this is one long run-on sentence. Sorry about that. The biggest thing from working out my plan, though, has been my own coach, having my own coach to be able to check in. As someone that I could go back to. My coach was in the Fox News for 19 years. Freddie Ray is her name.
Really?
She was an advertising executive in Fox News, at the Fox TV Corporation. So she was selling ads for 19 years. And she is able to just push me in ways I don't want to get pushed. Like putting my website up and selling the book is not going to sell the book. I have to make calls, just like I would tell any fundraising person, that you have to make calls or contact people and say, hey, will you buy the book? Or I'm running this program and I'm going to do this teleclass.
Yes.
She's been very good. Her motivation coaching is her business. She's been an excellent help in helping me, because I tend to see 10 years down the road. I can see, somebody did financial planning for me when I was a new employee, and all of a sudden, at 65 I'd be a millionaire, but it was all the way to 65 we were living in poverty. Because I was putting it all away into retirement, and my wife was saying things like, "Dear, we do need money for diapers. That's just important." And so the Highlands actually pulled that out. The Highlands and Skills Battery assessment did pull that out, where I just see far long term. So having a coach like Freddie is someone that takes the pressure off my relationship with my wife. She doesn't have to play that role. And also helps me to just kind of say, okay, those are your year goals. That's great. What are you going to do this quarter? What's your to-do list for this quarter? And what organizations are you going to join and speak in front of so that you can either do back-end room sales for your book or get, you know, consulting gigs out of that. So it's been a phenomenal journey. I want to write a book at some point called The Entrepreneurial Whiplash.
That's interesting.
Because without a coach, I wouldn't focus. I would be starting all these other things, which has been most of my life up until the time I took the leap. Oh, this rabbit trail is really what's going to be the next big one. This is going to be my jackpot. And my wife at one point finally had to tell me, you need to stop telling me this stuff because I can't keep it all straight, and 9/10 of it doesn't pan out anyway. I understand you have to chase it down, but
right.
I can't know it. So I want to create a book called Entrepreneurial Whiplash for helping spouses and loved ones.
Oh, I wish you would. I definitely wish you would, because that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting how it seems that you're chasing down all these random things when in fact, as a small business, as an entrepreneur, you really have to blanket the market, and you can't afford to leave any of these areas unexplored, you just can't afford it. So it certainly looks like you're going from pillar to post, from one thing to another. But really, I often compare it to, remember Ed Sullivan? I don't know if you're old enough to remember Ed Sullivan.
I'm sorry, I'm not. I was going to hear Nixon resign. So.
Those guys he had on it that would spin the plates, and they'd have like 20 or 30 plates spinning, and they were running all over the stage twisting the plates. You know, it really, being an entrepreneur, that's the best image that comes to my mind.
That's actually one of my seminars, is keeping this plate spinning, how to work in a small office and do your time management, set your goals, and then more importantly, communicate those goals with the people that you report to, whether it's if it's your board of directors or if it's your boss, how do you frame it so that they actually get what you're doing? Yeah, I love helping people do that.
Well, Mark, we have about a minute and a half left from this interview. It's been absolutely wonderful, and I want you to stay on the line after we finish. But for the moment, what in a minute and a half, what recommendations would you have to entrepreneurs who are facing the same challenges that you have?
I think, you know, I didn't mean this to become the get the coach call, but I would say get a coach.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. Yeah, I know. Get the fundraiser coach. No, get a coach, though, because there's so much that you're taking on as an entrepreneur. There's so much adventure, so much life, so much enthusiasm that you get to channel into what you do. But having someone help you focus, and also just having a time that's just for you. You're putting out so much as an entrepreneur that you need someone, some time to reflect and do the what we call in Covey language the Q2 time, the quadrant 2 work that tends to not get done, because as entrepreneurs we tend to be putting out fires. Even if we're creating them, it's exciting to put them out anyway. And taking that reflective time to make sure that those fires aren't there. So, and I do want to say, too, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I love communicating by email. And so either Facebook me or mark@fundraisingcoach.com is a great way to get in touch with me, too.
Well, I hope that you have a lot of people that are getting in touch with you from this interview, from this program. It's been fascinating talking with you and getting to know you a little bit online here. And I hope that down the line we can have you back on again another time.
Wonderful. Thank you
so
much.
So you're most welcome. So thanks again, Mark, for coming on our show today to talk with us, and thank you for sharing your inspiration as an entrepreneur. We'll continue this series next week when our guest will be Vivian Hill, all the way from Perth in Western Australia. He's always had a keen interest in natural health, achieving and maintaining a high level of health and fitness naturally is very important to him. Most of his life, he's been a school teacher or school administrator. Recently, he's been experiencing what Jim Rohn describes as the magic of part-time. He's been teaching full-time, but working on his internet business part-time. His background in teaching and administration has prepared him well for his current project, which is to educate people in ways to boost their immunity to disease. I hope you'll set a program reminder for yourself so you'll be sure to join us next week. On behalf of today's guest, Mark Pittman, and the whole staff of the Frazzled Entrepreneur Program, thanks again for being with us today, and bless you all. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Frazzled Entrepreneur Program. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, let us know. Send us a comment or tell us we're one of your favorite programs by clicking on the Add to Favorites button on our program's homepage. Once again, if you haven't got a copy of the Frazzled Entrepreneur's Guide, just go to guide.frazzledentrepreneur.com to order it. Or you can click on the link that you'll find on our Frazzled Entrepreneur program homepage. And while you're there, you'll also see a link to the Balanced Life Project. This project is a series of practical online workshops designed to help you use the critical life strategies that we've been talking about. You can put these strategies to work to create a calmer, more balanced life. Click on the Balanced Life Project link to check out what it's all about. Join us again next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of the Frazzled Entrepreneur Program.